Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hello one and all, and welcome to Behind the Glass, the podcast which aims to take you behind the scenes of the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass and the automotive and social media world. My name is Sam, I'm your host from the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass, and this week I'm joined by Tim Earnshaw from Windrush Car Storage, Car Batcave, Car Amazingness. What's the official?
Okay, so official is Windrush Car Storage, but we're kind of... It's turning into a bit of a car hotel.
It's Toys R Us for me. Every time I come here, I just drool over everything that's undercover behind us. And we're going to get into exactly what this place is, what the service they offer is. We're also going to be learning a bit more about Tim, his background, why he's into cars, where his interest came from. He's got quite an interesting story. So if you're new, if you're joining us here on YouTube, please make sure you subscribe for future episodes. Hit a like button now, that thumbs up, so that more people can find episodes like this. If you're listening to us, make sure you follow us on whatever platform you're listening to us to. I think that's probably all the housekeeping that's needed. Let's get on with things. Tim, who are you? Please, introduce yourself.
Right, guys, I'm going to try and keep this short and concise. But okay, so grew up on a farm. Lucky enough, surrounded by machinery, tools, and I suppose, from...
Any Lamborghini tractors?
Unfortunately not, and no Porsche tractors. Actually, I remember a Lamborghini tractor. I remember a guy coming along in a Lamborghini tractor.
Amazing.
Little sort of farm joke and all that.
Sure.
But surrounded by tools and stuff, and I suppose, stuff would break, and so you'd see the insides of engines and gearbox, and that kind of appealed for me from early stage, really. And... it's all started when I was about, I don't know, probably about 10, 11, 12. Had a Land Rover on a farm, and it was great. Learned to drive around a farm, all safe environment,
incredible.
All of that sort
amazing.
Of stuff.
Amazing. Not hitting any sheep. Or trying not
no,
to.
No, and of course, brother... had a quad bike on the farm, and ended up having races and all that kind of stuff.
So, sounds amazing.
Yeah, a few accidents along the way, but all sort of grounding stuff, I'd say. And really, where it all started was one day, a mate came home from school, drove a Land Rover, put it in reverse. I was standing outside it, and all of a sudden, there's this almighty bang. I was like, oh my God, what was that?
Sounds like
it's
my
just
Ferrari.
Broken my baby, Yeah, it could be, but it's like, oh, holy smoke, what do we do now? At the time, I went to a school where they had fantastic workshops, and I sort of asked them, and what should I do? Because I was kind of interested in how to fix it, really.
Okay, so it was the mechanical side of things that was your initial sort of what turned you on at the beginning.
Yeah, I guess so. I think my sort of parents sort of recognised that I was kind of into how things work, and part of the idea behind the Land Rover on a farm was, look, hey, I could learn to drive in it at young age, but if and when it goes wrong, it's a big Meccano set. Give it a go, get stuck in. So it went bang. And went to school. They had this sort of car workshop, asked them a bit of a heads up, what should I do? I said, okay, well, take this piece off, have a look down there in the gearbox, you might be able to see something. And I was just a bit clueless. I was like, can't
well,
see
how
anything,
old
guys.
Were you?
I was 12.
I think you were allowed to be clueless at 12.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
Giving
so,
yourself a hard time. I just didn't understand how that gearbox worked.
But I suppose, when you grow up on a farm, you're in a really lucky position where, you drive tractors starting at the age 10 or so, which
so
sounds
cool.
Nuts.
So
but,
cool.
But yeah, it's kind of, and also a good way to earn pocket money in a holiday. So yeah, dad would say, right, there you go. Go and roll that field or something boring. And anyway, so I had the Land Rover, had a look at it, thought, well, I can't see anything. went back and they said, well, look, why don't you bring it along? We can sort of help you, show you, you can pick up skills. I was like, yeah, okay. So got one of the guys on the farm, drive it to the school. They said, right, take out, first of all, let's take out the carpets. And I remember taking, this sounds crazy now, but taking the carpets out going, oh my word, I can't even remember how these are going to go back together again. I was that scared. And it's a crystallized thought in my mind now. Anyway, took it all out, took the gearbox out, stripped it down, kind of with their guidance. And it was all kind of like Meccano, fairly sort of self-explanatory-ish. Found the gear that was a problem, reverse idle gear. It stripped half its teeth, got a new one, put it back together, got it all back together, and then started it up. And it worked. And whoa, I was like, wow. And
this is amazing.
It was. I mean, it was kind of, it was just a really rewarding process of fixing something that was broken, learning it. And it was literally, I was hooked at that moment. I was like, wow, this is brilliant. So did a few more things on the Land Rover, overhauled the brakes and whatnot, and kind of did it. And then I suppose I recognized the challenge had gone. So I then...
broke it. Drove it as hard as you could to make it stop working.
No, it was all good. I mean, it was like any Land Rover. It was pretty slow. I mean, top speed of about 55 miles an hour.
But in the Land Rover, it feels very quick because at 55 miles an hour, it feels like everything's about to fall off.
It does. And actually, there's, again, another good sort of memory of being on a motorway, you just pass your test, 55 miles an hour. I mean, as a cruise controller, I had a piece of wood that would jam on the throttle and stick on the seat base, so you could put your feet up. But you're in the slow lane, safe. Right?
You're doing
55. Trucks go 56. So you're sitting in the fast lane, or slow lane,
come
going
on!
All of a sudden, and then you've got this truck coming past at a snail's pace. And so anyway, that was the Land Rover. And
so it was an early, because I mean, we couldn't have a more different beginning of our sort of car passion or car love story, because it sounds to me like, as you say, yours came from this kind of desire to sort of fix and understand and a sort of mechanical thing. I mean, I still don't think I would know what a gearbox looked like if you lay it out in front of me now. So where did that then progress onto? Because at 12 years old, you're fixing Land Rovers. Where did that lead you to?
Okay, so after that, I then sort of found that I really enjoyed that sort of process of learning mechanical stuff and how it works from fixing it. But okay, and then sort of, like I said, had the workshops at school were amazing. I was very lucky to be there, and they built these Lotus 7 type replica cars.
Oh, wow. What school did you go to, mate? That's amazing.
It was a place called Oundle School. Okay. And it was a boarding school.
But if they're doing these things for you, like, this is great.
I mean, it's, and one of the reasons why I went there is because they had this brilliant workshop. And anyway, they built these, like, they're called a low cost. It's a Lotus 7 low cost.
Okay.
Sort of rip off. Anyway, they're a very simple car. And they had like a little mini production line of them going, and they said, look, we can build one of these. And you literally build it from scratch, just chassis, the whole lot. I thought, well, that looks all right. But the idea of copying a car, going to the next door one, getting the tape measure out, going, yeah, okay, I need to cut a piece of metal that big, weld it in. And yeah, again, a challenging process within itself. But I thought, I want something to stretch me a bit more. So they said, well, we think we could do a Morgan recreation. So wow. I said, so I didn't know what one was, went back home. Said mum and dad, you know, duh. They said, oh, Morgan, yeah, I've always fancied one of those. I was like, wow. Okay, great.
I'm going to build you a Morgan, Dad.
I'll build you one.
So, I'm 14, but I'm going to do it.
Yeah, as you do.
That's amazing.
So I then spent the next 4 years where I used MGB as a donor car.
Okay.
So I got the engine, the gearbox, the prop shaft, the rear axle, the seats, the dials, the wheels. So effectively... it was a rebodied MGB, but all the mechanicals then restored the mechanicals, went to an autojumper, bought the wings for a Morgan, which on a Morgan side profile are the whole length of the car, literally placed those on the floor of the workshop, put the rear axle of the MGB on the workshop floor with the wheels on, and it's kind of like a kind of weird concoction, but kind of vaguely squinty.
Somehow
like a car.
Worked, yeah.
I got the bonnet, welded it onto the wings, and cut a broom handle in half and propped the bonnet up. And then I kind of, from there, reverse engineered a chassis, a space frame chassis, to fit all of these parts.
Wow.
Using the same suspension system as the Lotus 7 or Locos, which is a 5-link rear, and a double wishbone coilover shocks front. And anyway, I, and I did it for the challenge as to, and picked up the skills whilst doing it. So how to weld, how to fabricate, how to panel beat, how to wire, how to rebuild an engine. Now, at the time of doing this, I photographed the whole process. And I look back at it now, and I'm kind of amazed that A, I had the time to do it, but how I did it. And it, I know it sounds mind-boggling to do this at the age of 13, 14.
But to me, it really does.
But it really did kind of come, I don't want to sound big-headed, but it came natural to me. I've just always been good with my hands and learning it. And then when somebody showed me how to do something, I just took it and ran. And occasionally, you know, the teachers were busy, so you'd say, oh, can you show me how to do this? And at times, you just actually had to give it a go.
Figure it out yourself. Trial by error.
And actually, like a lot of things, often the best way. And anyway, left school, I built this Morgan recreation. Kind of had to take it all to pieces after I'd built it to paint it again. So that was a bit of a pain. Anyway.
Okay. So all I was going to say is through all of this, did you want to build a car so that you had a car, or was it just the actual matter of piecing it together and building it, that challenge that excited you?
Yeah, sure. Good question. Well, I honestly think it was the challenge. I love projects and I love challenges, and I can say it more now kind of retrospectively, but yeah, I love
looking at this amazing
I mean, it's, but to kind of, I suppose, to cut to the chase, I've got this danger of waffling about it,
so super interesting.
Give me the edit version. So long story short, finished this Morgan, spent 5 years building it, catalogued it with photographs, still got it in my office now, thousands of hours of building. And then thought, right, this is my baby. I kind of wanted to drive it, but really wanted to preserve it. I knew that it was more valuable to me than anyone else. At that time, I was going to uni, so it was not always had eyes on it. And it was in the workshop on the farm, and it, of course, you know, naturally picked up the odd ding, the odd little chip here, and it was kind of like, you know, make you want to cry. So again, lucky enough to have on the farm, we had loads of buildings, and I sort of identified one and said, look, to my dad, look, any chance I could have that and create a man cave, put my car in, it'd be safe. And so anyway, I then did that, concreted the floor, painted the floor, put an alarm in it, put a roller shutter door.
So cool.
Turned a really sorry state building into
A man cave. Everyone's dream. I mean, everyone's literal dream. And then you put your car that you built in that man cave.
Yeah, that's it. And I kind of, at that stage, I did it for me. But then I thought, as soon as I finished it, I thought, again, I love the project of doing the conversion of the building. But I thought, maybe there's other people that want to put their car away too. Now, at the time, my dad thought I was nuts. He said, why would anyone buy a car and then not store it at their own house? They're not going to be able to drive it. Anyway, I got a website built with some friends, got a little bit of advertising going, just to give it a go, a hobby. And I had a guy locally who put an E-Type with me, and then had the second customer, I think, guy who had a Mitsubishi Evo 6.
Nice.
Yeah, it was seriously nice. Silver. It was absolutely mint. And this guy loved it. It was his baby. But he just got a posting in the US for, I think, 2 years. Oh. And he was going, okay, I've seen your ad. I want to put
So he didn't want to sell the car, I didn't have anywhere to leave it.
And of course, so then there was this kind of like, when you think about it, this weird sort of balance. There's someone who's never met me before. He's giving me his baby for 2 years and he wants me to look after it. Now, what, of course, again, with hindsight, gave people so much comfort was the fact that with my Morgan there, I could talk to people about my Morgan, what I did, and they were like, okay, this guy kind of knows what he's doing mechanically, and it's his baby, so my car's going to be looked after likewise.
How old were you at this point?
So I was, it was 2004, so I haven't done the man.
Oh, yeah, I wasn't going to age you that.
I haven't done the man maths of it yet.
But you were young-ish.
At a guess, I was probably, 20 odd.
So 20s.
24, I guess. 24-ish. Okay. Yeah, 24.
So if I turned up with my Evo 6 and a 24-year-old opened the door and said, yeah, cool, I'll look after it for a couple of years, I think I would have been a little apprehensive.
Yeah, yeah.
But also, if I was 24 years old and I'd built a man cave for my Morgan and people were bringing their cars, I'd be like, I am now the biggest baller of all of my friends. Like, come over to my man cave and I've got an E-Type, I've got a Morgan. Well, I would have been like, if Instagram was around, I would have been all over that. I would have been all over that. Pretending
well, this
everything
is the thing,
was mine.
It's kind of like, again, it sounds like, makes me feel so old. This was kind of like before social media, kind of like.
Before the internet.
Before the internet. almost. But yeah, like, you know, I remember my dad, when I set the business up, he was kind of like, oh, you know, you want to take an ad in the Yellow Pages. I was like, Yellow Pages? And then he said.
For those listeners who don't know what the Yellow Pages is, it was Google before Google existed.
Again, you know, typical farmer. Anything I need's in that Yellow Pages. And then, of course, you know, I make him eat his hat regularly now.
Amazing. And, so good. So anyway, that was the birth of Windrush?
That was the birth. I mean, and you know, just quickly on that Evo, this guy was kind of like, and then he said, look, I want you to drive it on boost and off boost. I was like, oh my God, this is brilliant. So anyway, it was kind of humble start, sideline business, fast track, I suppose, a year or two. I then, again, this sounds crazy, but it's just, I'm a strong believer, you make your own luck. And my dad saw an ad in, again, so many farming connections here, so dull.
I love it. No,
I apologize, everyone, but it's he's the Farmers Weekly,
what a magazine.
Yeah,
mate.
What a good
subscription. Oh, I'm subscribed, come on.
For life. And, anyway, there was an ad in there from a company operating, it said basically event operators needed for races throughout Europe. And I was like, oh, that sounds pretty interesting. It was a bit kind of bit smoke and mirrors sort of thing. Anyway, applied for it, turned out it was for a primary subcontractor for Philip Morris and Ferrari in Formula One. And yeah, I was kind of like, wow. It was for one of the basically truck driver jobs for the hospitality units. I was like, wow, get to travel around Europe, that looks cool. Didn't have my truck test. They said, look, go away, do your truck test. You're our sort of guy, you can come back. While I was kind of just making inquiries, you know, how to do it all, I then got another call from him 2 weeks later saying, okay, we've now got the event manager's job up for grabs. We think it'd actually quite suit you. I was like, yes,
yep,
please.
Sounds great.
I'll take that. So then spent 5 years working basically with Ferrari and their Philip Morris connection. Because of the Philip Morris connection, it was with Ducati and MotoGP. So look, I won't lie, guys, it was brilliant, but I was kind of doing it for, you know, respect for the right reasons, and I suppose that's why the ad was so kind of mysterious to begin with. They didn't want to attract people for the wrong reasons, let's say.
You were doing it for the job that it was rather than the industry that it was in. You weren't doing it because you wanted to work your way through F1 and move on to the next and work your way up. It would just happen to be.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I always kind of wanted to. Look, anyone who's remotely interested in cars, Formula One is the pinnacle, right?
And this could be a whole separate podcast, but we're going to try and keep it short.
Yeah. I'm aware that
we're going to try and keep
Sam
it short.
Sam is a super fan.
What a nerd.
Yeah. Yeah. But you're right. If you're into cars in any shape or form, and I even, Americans that might be listening, you know, IndyCar or NASCAR, I get it, but you're interested in a motorsport, whatever the pinnacle of motorsport is in your area.
I think there's an admiration for anything that is the benchmark, the best.
There
of
you go.
It's
exactly.
Kind of like, yeah, it's that sort of, it's like, wow, this is cool, and yeah, it'd be a great job, love to do it, get to see a bit of Europe, work with an amazing team, good for the CV, where will it go? And in parallel to this, I was running Windrush on the side.
I was going to say, what happened to that? If you were doing 5 years traveling around Europe, what was happening to Windrush?
Well, I was lucky enough that because I was doing, it was effectively a logistics type role, as event manager, so all logistics. So with Ferrari, we had, by the time I left, we had 15 articulated trucks.
Wow.
All basically Transformers, robots in disguise. So it was, you know, demountable pods. It was a three-story building that would fold out with terraces.
Is this the motorhomes, or this was a separate? This
so
was
this
for
is motorhomes. Yeah,
oh, this
so
was
this
the motorhomes.
This
okay.
is motorhomes, which when I started was a couple of trucks, and then it grew because, you know, it's just.
And now they're these sort of insane structures that pop up by themselves, type.
Yeah,
thing.
and Ferrari were, or Philip Morris were, one of the first guys to go for the sort of mega motorhome, if you like.
Nice.
And I mean, and that was, again, another thing that attracted me to the job was that whole kind of coach building. It's totally bespoke. you've got a client's got a problem. They want to get VVIPs on site. They want to cater for them. They want to have them in air conditioning. They want to give them amazing audio visual. Yeah. And we've got to pack that into something that can transport around Europe, be plugged up, unplugged, and work again.
It was another challenge for you. There you go.
Hopefully it might make you smile. So the just thinking at Sam's coffee, the bane of my life for 5 years was the coffee machine. Italian company, right? And literally, because of course this coffee machine would be set up all working and shaken up down the road for 2 weeks until the next Formula One. And
Italians
they're not designed
to
do
coffee.
That. Italians like their coffee.
Can I just say, have you ever heard of Starbucks? They make fantastic takeaways. If you have issues with coffee machines again, Starbucks, delicious drink. Sponsor me now, please.
Yeah, anyway. Our coffee's not good enough for Sam. Do you know what? If we'd have had an espresso machine now,
it would have
transformed my life. But because, of course, you would never. I have got a newfound respect for baristas. You know, the variables in making a coffee are infinite. And that was what was so variable. It's every circuit we go to, different quality of water.
So funny. I mean, it shows that you're working for an Italian team, that these were the things that were really bugging you.
Yeah. It's the thing that sticks in my mind. You know, forget about the cars and it was the coffee.
Oh, my God. So as I say, this could be an entirely separate podcast. I think it's a fascinating part of your life. And there are lots of questions that I would like to ask you. But I tend to slip a bit F1 heavy too often. And I want to talk about what's going on here and how what I guess was a man cave with a couple of cars as a mid-20s 20-year-old then became what we're in right now, which we're going to move on to very shortly. But so yeah, what were those steps from finishing up?
Sure.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
From Formula One.
Sure.
To...
Yeah, good. Well, Formula One, 5 years, a long 5 years, running the business from website and mobile phone, you know, modern tech really helping, subbing out transport jobs, and it worked, and it was always a hobby. It got to the point where, and honestly, for the last year of my employment there, I deliberate on a daily basis.
That's okay. We can keep. You may have heard a very loud noise that's just started. We are in a working space. I'm not sure if that's.
There's a compressor.
That's a compressor.
We'll come
okay.
on to all
so
the
that we
detail
don't suffocate.
Stuff later.
Yeah.
But basically, so where was I?
So yeah, you were saying you were deliberating back
so
and
yeah,
forth.
So yeah, back and forth
before
for a
the
year.
Compressor tried to stop that story.
Life. Yeah. It was trying to tell me to shut up. Stop waffling. But it was for a year I was deliberating. Do I want to turn my hobby, something I love at the evenings and weekends, into my full-time job? And at that time, I think I had probably 30 cars in storage over a winter period. So enough to keep me busy. And of course, in that last year or so, I was finishing work. So I was based in the UK, managing the guys at a distance. I go out to the back-to-back races, go and help drive the trucks up to like Monza Spa, Hockenheim, Budapest, that kind of thing. But I was lucky enough to be in the UK that I would finish work. I would then leave work at 5, drive back to the Cotswolds. So if Sam wanted his car out the next day, for example, go and check the car over, polish it, whatever, then go back to London the next, that evening, so I get back to London at midnight, whatever. And it was just getting, I had no evenings and weekends.
Had no life,
I had no
basically.
Life.
You were working, life. Between the two, you were working flat
out. It was
out.
Pretty full on. And anyway, that was kind of that deliberation. Do I want to turn my hobby into what I do every day?
Because it becomes a very different beast at that point, right?
Yeah, exactly. I suppose ultimately, I didn't want to fall out of love with my passion. You know, we love cars, and it was kind of, I don't want to end up resenting them. So anyway, one day just made the decision. I think probably was I married then? Maybe.
Let's pretend been. Like you know.
Let's just say I was. Yeah, I think I was married.
Just in case your wife's listening. Yeah. I was definitely
10
married.
10 year wedding anniversary. I think I was probably married at that point. And it was kind of joint decision. Yeah, come on, let's get out of
Take
town.
Take a gamble.
Let's go for it. And honestly, from that day of handing the notice in, I suppose from giving the business evening and weekend attention to full-time dedication, I haven't fallen out of love. I love it.
Incredible.
I love what we do. I love making people happy. And I suppose that's what it's really all about.
I think, you know, it's such an interesting point, really, because I would say that I had to do the same at one point with this YouTube gimmick, where it was, you know, that question of I was still working, I was still doing my disastrous PR consultancy, and, you know, I was busy at both, and I couldn't do both the correct way without giving one up. And I was very aware that making videos and cars was a passion, a thing I loved. Did I want to make it work? Would I fall out of love with those things very quickly when I, you know, because when it becomes your full-time job, you need money.
Yeah.
There's no, yes. you can't
get away
like,
from it. Yeah.
You need money. So it's a different mindset. But one thing I learned very quickly, and I'm so grateful that I made that decision, is when you are doing something that you absolutely love, it doesn't really feel like work.
Yeah,
every now and again, you have to make those cutthroat decisions and it's business and blah, blah, blah. But all in all, you wake up each morning going, this is pretty cool. Like, it's quite cool that I get to do this as a job.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, you know, we rough with the smooth, right? You know, it's 24/7. You are thinking about work pretty much nonstop, especially, you know, we focus firmly on delivering the absolute best customer service. So storage is kind of the tip of the iceberg. And so you don't ever turn off. And that's why I didn't want to fall out of love with it. But I think that, you know, let's just say 1% of the time you've got a tricky situation to deal with. That for that moment, you kind of think, oh, this is hard work. But then 99% of the time,
you're loving life.
You're surrounded by people who love their car and enjoy the service. We make their life easier. And honestly, it's a pleasure. We're really privileged to do what we do.
Well, let's get on to that. Let's talk about what you do, because we've now sort of introduced you. So hopefully you guys listening and watching are more familiar with
the farming chat.
If you've skipped the last 20 minutes, you're idiots. Go back and listen to who Tim is. Which was super interesting. But, you know, you may have noticed, again, if you are watching us here on the YouTube channel, that we are surrounded by some pretty incredible cars. A lot of them undercover. Let's not pretend that this is not a LaFerrari right behind us, but it is undercover. We've got 488s, we've got Carrera GTs, and a whole load of things. Last time I was here, you had a Bugatti Chiron pulling out. It's absolutely unbelievable. This is literally a bat cave at a top secret location. And this is your main storage facility, would you call it? Because you have another one, right?
So yeah, do you know what? It's rapidly become our main show. So Cotswolds is our HQ.
Oh, okay, because that's where you moved with your wife to start the business.
Yeah, that's right. So family farm's back there, and that's where basically we don't do any farming now.
Yeah.
I've taken over the place.
Amazing.
But don't worry, my dad charges me a healthy enough rent.
Brilliant.
So basically HQ's back there where it's 2004 started, so we're year 14 now. It ran there for 10 years. We've got, I don't really like to talk about numbers, but actually I'll give you some numbers just to put it in context. So we've got 200 cars in the Cotswolds. We've got 150 nearly here in London.
Wow.
It came about 3 years ago or so, maybe 4 years ago. The passion for the business, the word was beginning to spread. We're getting a good reputation, you know, hard earned, and people phoning up say, "I want to put my car with you. Where are you?" And we're like, "Oh yeah, we're in the Cotswolds." And they're like, "Where's that?" And we're like,
"Help me!"
It's about 2 hours outside of London, and it was just a turn off. And at that point, we thought, right. And up until that point, we were getting a 100% conversion rate. Anyone who inquire, we would get them for a tour. Get them on board, love the service, and you know, look, we're never complacent, but it was just such a rewarding process
of course.
People signing up, and then to not have people sign up because we weren't in London was just it really pulled at my heart. It's going look, it is a business, but emotionally we love what we do. So did loads of research and then found where we are now, and it was a long journey to get where we are now, find the perfect place. And so we're now, I think, about 3 years into
wow.
it. And this has become, the sort of major part of our business now.
It's a very impressive space. And you're not going to be able to see it, for those of you, again, who are watching. But it does stretch for miles, literally for miles. And there are tons of cars in here, as you mentioned, around 150 or so come or go each day. And they're all under these stunning, immaculate covers. And it's a very impressive sight. To break down the sort of the basics, because as I mentioned right at the beginning of this podcast, sort of what is car storage and why do people do it? And I think for those, and especially even me, when before I bought a car that I wanted to put into inverted commas storage, I always questioned, like, why on earth would someone not want that on their driveway? You know, you see that cliched Instagram picture of like a LaFerrari parked outside a really awful looking house, and people go, like, oh, goals! Like, you know, he bought a car before his house. What a hero! That's not a good thing to do, people. But so I always question, why on earth would that happen?
Yeah, that's a good question.
And so what do you actually offer as a service, and why do you think your customers come to you to put their cars here and not outside their houses?
Yeah, sure. Okay. Well, and that's a good point, because a lot of people, when they think of storage, and look, in my head, and I've been doing, you know, we like to think we're the benchmark, and it's stereotypically, you say car storage, people think of a dusty, dirty barn. There might be a cover thrown over a car. It's just not that. We are everything to the opposite end of that. And so why do people put their car with us? So security is number one. So we've got a number of clients who have got plenty of space at home. A lot of clients are time poor, and effectively they like the fact that we're babysitting their pride and joy. And it might be one car, might be a collection of cars. We've got clients that have bought one car, tried the service, enjoyed it. They've then got a collection of cars with us, and they then rotate the car. So we don't want people to think that it's a lock and leave, or it's locked up, it's inaccessible, that's car storage. No. It really is more of a car hotel, where we are the car guys. The car comes in, it gets fully appraised condition-wise, we record that, gets fully valeted, the whole thing is ticked off on a tick sheet, everyone sort of puts ownership to their work, so that when the car's then in its storage bay, it's got a soft cover on, it's got an automatic battery conditioner, and we're just simply then monitoring and looking after that car in a controlled environment. So it's dehumidified, which again we can come on to in a minute, but it's more about the security. Nobody's got access to the car, no one can walk up to it other than Windrush staff. And when we get the call, now it might be someone comes into the UK every 6 months or so. If they left the car somewhere else 6 months, battery's gonna be dead, it's gonna be dirty, it's gonna be a pain to get ready again. So it's there, it's on the button. Or we've got clients that use their car every day, every couple of days. All we ask for is just that heads up, I'm coming down. Because the car's already pristine under the cover, we're giving a kind of, you know, like, bit geeky, but pre-flight checks. So we're checking the clock, we're topping up the screen wash, we're doing the tire pressure. So we know that when it goes out the door, although the client's playing for car storage, they don't need to do anything. A lot of our clients are time poor, and that's where we really come into our own. It's that it's whatever the question, the answer is always yes, and then we kind of worry about how we're gonna do it.
You're like, oh my god, why do we say yes to that? What an awful decision.
But it's kind of never say no.
It's
that's the sort of mindset. And I think the type of client that we've got on board appreciate that, because they've got hectic lifestyles. And that's, again, I think just one point I want to pick up on is that people go, oh, what a crying shame, these cars are all locked up and they're not used. Look, there's one or two that are not used, but I'll assure you that actually 99% of our clients are car guys, girls. They love their car, and that's why it's with us, because they want to tuck it up. They want to look after it.
Well, I mean, I think this is a huge thing. So to be completely open and honest, I unfortunately don't store my car here at Windrush, but I'm hoping this podcast gets me mate rates from Tim. So we'll see how it goes. But
working on it.
I keep my car in a separate location, but I do keep it in an underground, supposedly safe and secure storage location. And the reason I do that is for a lot of the things that you've just hit on. Firstly, I travel a lot because of YouTube and work, and I would not feel a peace of mind leaving my car outside my house. The space outside my house is open to the public. Anyone can walk up. Firstly, I don't have a battery conditioner there, and 360 battery lasts about half a day. So I couldn't leave it outside. Normal. And, you know, I'm so obsessed with that car. It is a child to me. The thought of it being out in the rain whilst I'm off in Monaco, or the thought of maybe someone coming past and scratching it by mistake, or a delivery man or whatever, I would not be able to relax. So that's why I put the 360 in storage. And as I say, we have to say storage with inverted commas, because I do think there's that kind of thought process, or storage, where it's locked away for 3 years and you're not going to touch it. I drive my car probably, sometimes I take it on big road trips, but once every couple of weeks, at least, if not once a week, going in and taking it out. But I know that when I'm not driving it, it's tucked up, it's somewhere safe, it's somewhere dry, it's got battery conditioner, and it's secure. Obviously, here, you guys go that step further than that whole level above, and I think it's, I can understand why you have some of the cars that you have in here, but I also love the fact that you do have some cars that you wouldn't necessarily expect to be locked up next to a LaFerrari. Sure. It's just people's pride and joys. Cars... If we're passionate about cars, you want the best for them. It's a ridiculous thing, isn't it? Look, I've got a few sort of more quick-fire questions to round things off. You're allowed one pass. What was your first car? I mean, we've talked about the Land Rover, but what was the first one you went out and bought?
Okay, first car I bought. So, yeah, probably mine. Yeah, I like that. Mark II Golf... but it was the diesel. So it was 1.6, I think. It was like a tractor.
Nice, yeah.
But it was still a Mark II Golf, right?
It's still a Mark II Golf. That's still
awesome.
I did
put the GTI lights on the front.
Okay. Just to try and scam people, I love that. I had a Mark IV Golf as my first car, and I put all like Halfords chrome strips on. I don't know why. Almost. Okay, and then what would your dream next car be if you were to purchase a car in the next 12 months?
So, well, I've just bought the Golf R after loads of research. So basically, I had a B5 RS4 Avant. It was great. It was kind of, you know, like a poster car for me. Do you know what? It's a modern classic, but it was too good to use daily. And also, it didn't have all the modern comforts. Like, it had firm suspension, it was manual. And okay, I'm getting old and, you know, moaning about it now. But I've got to say, the Golf R, I'm so excited about it. It ticks a load of boxes.
Amazing.
I've just run it in, so literally, I've just hit 1,000 miles, and now
so asking what your next car is a bit cruel at this point, because you're so excited about your Golf R.
I kind of like stealthy cars, so I'm not really that showy. So I like so the Golf's in the grey. So do you know what RS4 I like? Okay. Although I have to agree with I think it was your last podcast I was listening to on the way here, that the RS has kind of just lost that special.
Dulled down a bit, hasn't it?
It was always supposed to be, you know, that really kind of special car. Every few years, Audi would bring out the new one. Anyway, so that's kind of. Although we've just done a new car detail for a client who's bought a new RS4 Avant, and that is
very
cool.
Nice.
In Nardo.
Very, very nice. Very, very nice. Okay.
Awesome. Kind of non or stealthy cars are quite light.
You've just broken in the Golf R, so I won't pressurise you too much on that.
Don't pop a bubble just yet.
And the final question then, do you have an all-time dream car, one car that before you're old and grey you hope to be able to get?
Do you know what? Honestly, Sam, this is the danger of the, this is the worst bit about the job. We work in a sweet shop. There, I think that variety is the spice of life. Honestly, do I think that? You know, I've also got going back to my Land Rover days. I've got a 1949 Land Rover. It's like a Series One. Okay, awesome. And anyone that knows Land Rovers, it's kind of lights behind the grill. They're really cool. But it goes top speed 40 miles an hour. I can have
if you
as much.
Get there.
Yeah. So there's a time when I had, you know, RS4 and the Land Rover. I had probably as fun in both of them. Different times because one
was
brilliant.
That's how they make you feel, right? It's not all about speed and, you know, V12.
It's the soul, and I think the soul of the car. So different cars have different soul. I think it's very interesting with the electric cars that are coming on now. We got offered a test drive in a Tesla the other day.
Okay.
And it was lightning quick.
Not much else.
Do you know what? I'm glad you said that because it did lack soul. Yeah, and I kind of feel bad saying that. They'll get there.
They will get there. They'll get there. You know, it's an amazing achievement what they've done so far. But apart from the incredible speed, I left feeling a bit cold from my Tesla.
Yeah,
experience.
No, I have to agree. But I think
I'm going
to
push you though. I'm going to push you. There's got to be one car. There's got to be one. You don't. It's not your only car, but one car you want to own.
Okay. Do you know what? So I really like right now Porsches. I think we've got a couple of Carrera GTs back there, but it's Carrera GTs and 918. Do you know what? My brother's got a 997 Carrera 2 manual, Boggo Basic. It's probably, what, £30,000?
Sure.
It is a fantastic car.
You love it?
I love it.
Yeah?
Do you know what? I went on a performance driving day at Millbrook. That car does a lot.
Yeah.
It does a lot.
Incredible car.
Because the danger is, I think, with cars now is that you can't see in shop, or you won't see it if you're listening, but there's a GT2. We're just starting to see the GT2s come in.
Yeah, GT2 RS.
Mega car, you know, 700 horsepower. We've got a F12 just behind us. Again, 700 horsepower. Now look, okay, acceleration, phenomenal, but it's,
a little bit over-engineered.
Too much horsepower.
Oh, no, I'm so with you in this.
So you get the 997, 300 horsepower. That's a usable amount of horsepower.
On the public road. I'm so with you in this argument, and it's a reason for me to fly my 360 flag, because on the road, it's about how cars make you feel, and that's why hot hatches will forever be so popular in the UK and on English A and B roads, because in real life scenarios, that's as quick as you can get. And I think it was Chris Harris who said that the new Civic Type R, maybe was it Chris? I can't remember who said it.
Yeah, good car.
Is the quickest point A to B car, except maybe a 911 Turbo. And what two different ends of the scale of car world could you be in? Because you don't need 700 horsepower. Don't get me wrong, I'd love an F12.
No. Well, me too.
But but you don't need it. So I'm so with you.
Yeah.
But you still haven't answered my question. One car to own before you die.
I thought you'd forgotten.
Just one. Come on, there's got to be one.
Car. So, okay, one car.
It could be another Land Rover. I don't mind. One car.
Okay, so what is it for? Is it for every day? Is
it whatever you want. Just one car that before you die, you'd like to say, I own that car. I own that car. It can be for a week. You could sell it a week later. I don't care. Just one car.
Do you know what? I know that I think the Carrera GT.
GT.
I want to say the 918, but my jury's out on the hybrid thing. Mm. Look, you got a load of torque fill. I like that. But I'm just not quite sure on the kind of,
direction of it and what it means and the driving experience. And
I do like the analog stuff.
Okay.
And I do like a naturally aspirated manual.
Pretty winning, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to hold you to Carrera GT because I feel like otherwise this is going to go into another podcast We're going to keep going.
Come back.
Anyway, thank you so much for joining me. I hope you guys have found this interesting. Obviously, we've spoken a lot about Tim and his business and Windrush here. There, of course, are other storage facilities available all around the world. As I mentioned, unfortunately, I'm not at Windrush. I'm somewhere else. But hopefully we'll sort that soon. So yes, of course, check out if you're in London, if you're anywhere you want to be, you can get on Google. But of course, if you're interested in checking out Windrush's prices or finding out more about their services, website link will be below for those watching on YouTube. Do you know your website off the top of your head?
Yes, windrushcarstorage.co.uk.
Those are for the listeners. So yes, thank you once again for joining us. I hope you guys have enjoyed it. Make sure to subscribe if you're watching us on the YouTube channel. Give it a thumbs up so other people can find this video. And if you're listening to us, make sure to keep following. Thank you very much, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.